The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on the pub trade by those working in it. I'm the morning advertiser's Ed Bennington, and with me as ever are my lovely sidekicks James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. Heath is an infamous pub operator with a strong interest in serving great food. In fact, he's proud to be the owner of a pub that's listed as one of the country's top 50 gastro pubs. James also has a strong interest in food, is a less than proud owner of a gastro band.
That's so shit.
Oh my God. All right, Slim.
I worked on that all weekend.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
Your wife special must have missed you. Not a lot.
Anyway, moving on. So this episode of the Lock-In Podcast sees us somewhere a little different for a change than the pub. We're actually in the first ever, I think, alcohol-free off-licence run by the great guys at Club Soda. We'll be chatting to the fantastic Laura Willoughby in a little while about the shop and what they're doing with it. But we'll also be taking a deeper dive into the low and no sector and speaking to Amanda Thompson of Thompson & Scott to chat about the alcohol-free wine sector. And also joined by James Kindred of Big Drop Brewing to talk low and no beer. Heath, are you looking forward to the wine?
Yes. I'm interested.
I'm interested. I'm interested in his reaction.
Well, do you know what I mean? I'll reserve judgment for later.
Right, before we do all that, let's just catch up on what's been going on in the world of pubs recently. Plan B has ended.
Thank God.
Has that made a huge difference to you two with your...
Not really.
No.
We were running like you do that. See the Welsh sort of unlocking now, and you think, God, they were still under such strict...
Yeah.
You forget, you know? Mm. It's interesting how they're talking about getting, you know, more funding for... They talk about the Welsh guys particularly. But I think one of my concerns is that we've just forgotten about funding and help now.
Yeah.
We've been moved on to other things. I don't mean like lock-ins.
If they're going to bring this national insurance rise in,
yep.
There's no way they're keeping VAT at 12.5% for our sake.
No.
No way. We're dreaming.
Yeah. No.
So, you know what I mean? It's like, we should be grateful to be open, but yeah, you've had your luck and that's it. Goodbye.
Yeah. I think been very cleverly sidestepped. I think you have to ask yourself, a lot of sectors were getting a lot of help in the early days when it was very much a survival exercise. And they had no choice, Rishi and the team, just to throw money in. We see some of these loans that are unsecured or secured by the government falling over. But that was just a massive sticking plaster. And you have to say, I think we'd have probably got the help regardless of whatever cries we were making. But now, when really we could make a difference, there's nothing. And actually, even now talking about other things other than actually pubs being in dire straits, you know, the rent moratorium stopping. So I think that our associations need to pull their finger out and keep their eye on the ball and keep the VAT issue and get this rating issue sorted out. What we can't do is just, I saw today there was talk about new labelling, food labelling, which is clearly an issue, but let's not be sidetracked by that stuff. We need to keep on about the things that will make the business sustainable.
We're not. I mean, I'll place money on it now. We're not getting VAT at 12.5%. It's going to go back up. They're not going to. If they're going to,
but that's the most.
What's that?
Should we? If I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but shouldn't we be at least trying?
Oh, we should try. But come on, backbenchers have been fighting for this 1.525% national insurance to be scrapped away. And Rishi, come on, they did that thing in the Times. There's no way we're going to get it. They'll push. What else have they actually really done? Everything we got given was going to be given to us anyway.
Yeah,
but arguably, but yeah.
So I don't.
Well, otherwise you'd have just had blood in the streets. I mean, it would have just been.
The rent moratorium's coming to an end soon.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the industry's still battered. You know what I mean?
Well, they're just going to reopen, you know, fully reopen, just with unbelievable debt, rising costs again. Yeah. We talk about the cost of people, you know, home fuel bills and what have you. Well, just take that into a big cavernous pub and you're just multiplying that by, you know, 20, 30, 40 times.
Add the staff, you know, the staff wages, add all the rise in food costs, and customers still expecting an experience and complaining that it's expensive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't... Yeah.
You can't pass that. You can't... If you really... I think we're seeing margins massively eroded.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to help that margin erosion is to obviously help with the VAT, for example. And we still need to keep on about rating. I know I keep saying it, but it can't be left alone. It needs to be championed.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I did particularly like Nicola Sturgeon saying that the restrictions in Scotland were worth it.
Yeah.
But look at New Zealand. Jacinda should get together. 24 days quarantine in New Zealand. Right. Coming in contact with someone with COVID. 24 days. Like, the whole country's just going, what? No one's going to be working.
Are they actually putting up with that, though, in New Zealand? I mean, you're quite feisty.
There's a restaurateur I follow on Instagram, and he did a massive rant about it. But, like, he's Auckland City restaurateur, and he's got businesses, and he's just going, this is ridiculous. I've got no staff. Everyone's quarantining.
Yeah. But it's not moving away from that zero COVID kind of policy.
They've just gone too nuts. But that's the same as Nicola Sturgeon, all these people, you know.
Well, it's worth it. What was worth it? Because your infection rates were no better than the rest of the country. It didn't achieve anything. It didn't resolve any of those issues. So what was worth it?
There was no evidence it worked.
Not at all. Yeah. Elsewhere, we've seen beer prices rising.
What did they say? 50p on a pint in London? 50p on a pint,
yeah.
But that's the thing, though. What, we put it up and then customers are like, geez, you're expensive. Let's have a couple of cans of Stella at home. Do you know what I mean?
Have you put your prices up recently?
I did tweaking on soft drinks.
We did when we reopened, didn't we?
January. Well, come on. If you're not going to have a beer, it's going to be £9 for a Coke.
Up from £8.95.
I mean, you were talking a while ago about tripling your price of your Guinness, weren't you? So, I mean...
Yeah. No, I think
that was only to make
we
up
did some tweaks. We did some tweaks, but you've got a bit. The problem is all the suppliers, anonymous beer suppliers, was like, unfortunately, this is the price now. So you can't let your margin. We're already getting hit hard on everything else. You have to pass it on to the consumer, and just hope enough that you've got a product that they really enjoy coming to time and time again, and don't mind the little increase.
And is 50p a pint realistic?
It's quite punchy, isn't it?
Well. If it's just given to you at 50p per pint more, then you haven't got a choice.
True. I think if you're not go to the pub.
Yeah, but that's the problem. There's an operating.
Here's the winner again. The Treasury are the winner again because we put our prices up. Yeah, they collect more VAT. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's. We're just basically tax collectors.
Good enough, too.
Yeah. And have you got your grants yet?
Hackney opened their grants on Friday. And they said, hopefully, they'll be paid by the end of March.
Okay.
That's ridiculous.
Haringey approved for Highgate, and they haven't been paid yet. Haywards Heath, when did we get the money? It was
Early Jan.
Early Jan.
Day after, wasn't it?
No, honestly, it was pretty much. And the system they've got there is so good that most of it's pre-filled. So you just have to put in the reason for the claim. I mean, two lines, clearly. Affected by COVID.
James needs a new car.
Job done.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Haringey this time used that same grant system.
Yes.
Hackney haven't. Haringey, it was a bit more, like, a lot more labour intensive to do it. But Hackney, man, it was pretty basic. But they're saying end of March, you should get paid.
It's not good enough. They've got the money. It's not they're running interest, by the way. It's just incompetence.
Yeah, they just, you know, so if you're a small business like the pub we've got down there, you're not busy. You're probably running it. 25% of what you normally run at, and you got the bills are still the same or gone up, and you're still waiting on it's only £4,000 on that pub.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's an insult.
And speaking of challenges and tragedy, you're having a bit of a spat with TripAdvisor, I believe.
I'm going legal with TripAdvisor.
Yeah, I need to be accountable.
Yeah, some guy, I'm getting trolled by somebody, and this guy's said that I went out the pub and I was showing photos of girls from Thailand to customers.
That's not what I said.
Oh wait,
he's never shown me.
I've got this guy trolling me, and he's doing multiple accounts. And so I contacted TripAdvisor, and I said, "Listen, this isn't right." And they said, "Yeah, it's fine with us." I went back again. I said, "It's not right." And they keep on just. I think it's an automatic. You know, it's an algorithm. Mm. So I've spoken to lawyers now, and they've got this QC who's a friend of a friend who will represent me for free. And I've got the first initial thing is to write to TripAdvisor and tell them to take this down because it's defamation of character. It's been confirmed as defamation of character. I've written to them again, and I've actually posting registered post to the head office in Massachusetts to say you need to take this down. And if they don't, then we're going to go legal, and this guy's quite happy to do it for free just because he doesn't like TripAdvisor either.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, no, and it's definitely not true. You weren't showing your customers pictures of Thai girls.
I'm not showing pictures of Thai girls. I don't know if it was Thai girls, I just said girls, but yeah. In Thailand.
In Thailand, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Well, I think we'll look forward to this battle.
Yeah. We shall look forward to hearing the outcome. let's park that one there. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast. I'm delighted to say we've got the proprietor of Club Soda, that's alcohol-free off-licence, here with us now, Laura Willoughby in the flesh.
I've become a proprietor.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Oh, I feel this is a great elevation.
We've moved you up. So, I mean, tell us about the shop, Laura. What are you doing here? Why are you doing it?
So we popped up on the 13th of December to provide the UK's first alcohol-free off-licence, to bring together all the brands that we know are there, because there's now enough that you could fill a whole shop, actually now twice over, to be honest. But we've got over 80 brands here now, and we'll have over 100 by the end of the week. We're just rearranging the shelves. And it's mainly originally I set it up because I didn't think we'd be able to have a festival this January because of COVID. We could have a shop though, and I wanted to give people the chance to sample drinks then go away with something that they love. And I have to say, it's just been overwhelming, the response we've had and how happy people look when they leave the shop.
I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, that there's that much out there that you can fill a shop with this now. I mean, we talk about this, and most of the reaction I get from the likes of Heath and James is usually quite disparaging about this sector, yet that's a big market, isn't it? And I keep telling pub operators, you look at a supermarket, stop shaking your head and looking at
it. It's a big market being driven by something you guys might not know, young people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, harsh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, I felt...
Young people who aren't married with wife and children.
She's talking about
like
you two.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I'm not in that young person category either. And actually, I always talk about the fact that it is cross-generational. Just different motivations and different drinks for different groups of people. But yes, it's a trend that's not going away. And it's still a trend that's in its infancy.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that it is being driven by the off-trade. In terms of you look at how the space is being given to it, has got bigger and bigger and bigger in supermarkets.
But
I've still got pubs sitting there going, no, it's never going to catch on.
Well, but saying that, I mean, when I first met you, Ed, and I remember you coming to see me and you said, you were sober, and you came and said, I've come to meet you because normally when this sort of thing happens, because it's when we first did our pub guide back in 2017, when people normally do this, we write articles taking the piss out of them. But, he literally did. I have corroborating evidence
here. I would never have said that.
But I've looked at what you've written, and you're so pro pub, there's got to be something here. And that's the truth is that actually since 2017 till now, pubs have made, I'm a big defender of pubs, have gone leaps and bounds into alcohol-free space. Yes, there probably could be more, and there are pubs that aren't the best cases, but you know, you can go to any pub now and talk about an alcohol-free beer and you won't get the bar staff behind the bar going, what, light water? You know, things have changed quite dramatically.
And I mean, what have you, I mean, how's the shop traded? Have you been busy? Has it been...
We have been amazingly busy. Right. I mean, we've had a lot of media, so that means that lots of people have come to find us. We're definitely a destination shop here in Oxford Circus. So people are coming out of the way to find us. It has been... The other thing that's really excited me is it's a real diversity of customers. So yes, there are, you know, people who are now sober like me, who have changed their drinking habits and decided they don't want to be a dickhead anymore. But there's also
a load of...
No, I was definitely only talking about myself. I couldn't possibly talk about anybody else in the room. But we've had a huge number of Muslim customers. We've had lots of pregnant women in. We've had people who are just really interested in drinks. We've had people doing Dry January. We've had lots of people coming in talking about the fact that they're cutting down and they're really excited to find something they can have midweek. So it really is, you know, I've always talked about that diversity of customer in this space. What we've had coming through the door has proved that.
And I mean, where are you picking the products from? You said you've got sort of there's more out there. So how are you curating it? What are you doing?
Club Soda is a collaborative movement. You know, in our membership, our venues, brands and consumers. So the brands helped us create this shop. They've all paid for their space and have put faith in us to go out and, well, faith in me to go out and be very loud to the media. So at the moment, the brands in here are the ones that have paid something to be here, but actually we give them a really good sampling opportunity. Absolutely everything in this shop is available to sample. Okay. We open up a bottle, everyone gets to try it. People go away with something that they really love. And that's people spend well over half an hour in the shop trying things and picking what they want to get. So as a sampling opportunity, it's great for the brands, and that's sort of how we've picked them. They're sort of self-selecting. Yeah. But that's okay, because you know what, they're the really good brands.
Yeah. And you were supposed to be open a month, but you're now extending that.
Yeah. So
is that a reflection of the success, or yeah, just that you've got the space for longer?
No, it's a reflection of the success, because we still have to pay some rent for here, and I'm now feeling the pain of business rates just the same as everybody else. Ouch. But we decided we want to see what February would be like compared to a dry January. January, we've got lots of media. We've already got lots of repeat customers. Lots of people saying, please, please stay. Mm. So that's led me to think, okay, well, what can I do next in this space? I mean, just to let you know, we've also been running throughout this period trade masterclasses for beer, wine and spirits. And they've gone down really, really well as well. And so my view is okay, what's next? We do some things particularly well in Club Soda. We can train the trade, and we've got an online training course for the trade, just to educate staff in the basics of low and no alcohol. We go and, you know, as you know, I'll go to the opening of an envelope, so I'm at every trade show. I'm happy to talk to the media. So that education piece is really important. How can we create a space that does more of that? So it's not just about the drinks on the shelf and the sampling, although I'm a true believer in sampling being really important. But how do we also create a space where people can come and learn? Mm. And, you know, we've had whole teams from, there's a new venue opening up around the corner. They literally came in and they said, right, we've brought our team in. Give us everything on your shelves that does something for you. We want anything with aptogenics in, herbal ingredients, you know, anything like that. That's what we want in our bar. And so we took them through the whole lot, and they've gone away with a whole selection for their new venue. Yeah. So it's not just about the training, but it's about creating a space for teams to come and collaboratively stand around a table and try some stuff, see it in context and understand where it may fit behind their bar.
Absolutely. I mean, James Heath, I mean, looking at the sheer breadth of the range
so much,
here.
Isn't it?
I mean, were you even aware of half of this, do you think?
No. Nowhere near.
I mean, you two aren't too bad. I mean, we have a reasonable...
In terms of the average part, we're probably better than a lot. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. The ones I think, a lot of the sort of what I'd call the mixers, you know, you make long drinks and cocktails, I think that's almost done. I think that's got to a point where it's very much in a good place. There's lovely choices. My wife doesn't drink at all. And we've always got these things kicking around. Heath, I know.
You mean the spirits? So
yeah, spirits. I mean spirits.
I mean, what I think is interesting for venues is there are now a lot of spirits here that can now lend themselves to be an ingredient in your alcoholic cocktail as well as your alcohol-free.
Yeah.
And in terms of creating space on your bar, that's and behind your bar, that's a really interesting proposition. So, you know, the High Point, I think, is just beautiful in whether it's an alcoholic or alcohol-free cocktail. And so I still think there's a lot of space to go. I talked to bit about, you know, functional ingredients. And I know the Virgin Mary bar in Dublin, which is an alcohol-free only bar, sells like three times as many mood enhancing cocktails as he does his other alcohol-free cocktails. So I still think there's lots I want to share with you guys about how you can sell the product to your customers, because without the alcohol in that, you know, there is another product you need to sell.
There's the answer, James. Mood enhancing drinks for your wife.
Perfect.
Well I was going to say most men drive their wives to drink. You've actually done the opposite.
Yeah, she drives me. I went for a curry the night.
Listeners, I'm not even going here. Okay? But just to say, I've got your backs.
No, but we went to a curry house the other day and for my birthday.
Was it your birthday?
Yeah, we went, and the guy there, you know, in the curry, had a nice selection of sort of, you know, some of these drinks and the spirits, make half dozen non-alcoholic cocktails.
Yeah.
I had two bottles of Riesling, but she had a couple of them.
We had a couple of guys in our workshop who are opening a new shisha bar in Collier's Wood, and they want to give a better experience to people than Coke and lemonade, which is normally served in a shisha bar. And they've gone away with a whole load of ingredients to make cocktails that match their tobacco. And to me, that's really, really exciting. These guys they went away with, you know, several hundred pounds worth of stuff to experiment with. And they sat with Camille, you know, who is not the normal shisha bar cleaner. can tell, not only because she's carrying twins as well, but they went away with an awful lot of knowledge that they now know how to pair these spirits with their cocktails.
I suppose you can make, like, the thing is, as an operator, if you can, it's not just Coke and lemonade, you can actually sell something and actually make a decent margin on it and give a better experience and get them talking about it.
And drinking more of it rather than nursing that one soft drink.
Oh, great, I'll have a Coke. Great, this is all you've got. Coke Zero.
And you know, for me, it's about an equal experience as well. It doesn't matter what time of day you're drinking, what day you're drinking, whether you drink normally or not, that every time you go to a venue, the experience feels like that pub wants you there.
As opposed to, like...
As opposed to, you know, as I always say, half a pint of Coke from a hose as if I'm about to go and wait in the car park for my dad.
A pack of crisps.
It's so true.
I mean, what do you think you've learned from running this that surprised you, would you say?
I guess there's some amazing runaway bestsellers here, and so that so that's interesting to see what's really popular. The fact that people coming in asking for brand names now, which a few years ago wouldn't have happened. People actually come in, look at the beers and go, right, I've tried the Lucky Saint, I've tried the Big Drop. You know, just like any other beer enthusiast, they're looking for some new things. And that I'm taking, you know, people come in and ask, what wine, red wine and whiskey are the two most popular things that people come in directly and ask for. I'm looking for something that shares this experience. I've now been taking people on journeys with different products that I think create that experience. They're not whiskies, and you know, and they never will be, but they people are looking for to recreate that ritual, and it's really, really important to them, and they want something to go in that space. So don't underestimate that. It's not about it's a ritual and occasion just as much as taste and flavor.
So do you think that's important, that they don't set about with a comparison?
I think most people who've change their drinking in some way, know not to compare alcoholic with alcohol-free. You could probably do it a little bit better in the beers, to be honest, but, you know, once you're talking about dropping from 40% to zero, that will always be noticeable. But people still want to finish the day and drink a drink that feels like a reward, that, you know, can be made in a nice glass, isn't the same as the drink they've been using to refresh themselves throughout the day, like tea, coffee, or like a soda. They're looking for things that make them feel part of the occasion. And so they know that it's not going to be the same, but they're looking for, you know, the smells, the aromas, the acidity. They're all things that people want. And there is a big difference between consumers who come in here and have never drunk. Consumers that come in here like me, who have given up and are so excitable about being sober, it's just, you know, really delightful to pair them with a drink. And people who still drink and are looking to bring in something during the week, they all go for slightly different choices.
I suppose it's like veganism, isn't it? Like, you've got vegans who have vegan food out and they have something new and they go, oh my God, that's amazing. You have people who've turned to veganism and go, yeah, it's not, like, it's just missing something. Do you know what I mean? There's always...
But there is something for everybody, you know. People go to the wines, and if people still drink alcoholic wine, they will notice the big difference between an alcoholic and alcohol-free wine. I don't. To me, it's a delicious drink, right? The alcohol-free wines, it's great. I've not drunk wine for 10 years. But for people who still drink wine, I will always start with the Copenhagen sparkling tea, because it's not like anything else. It's his own drink. And that's why we've got none left.
You're out of luck there, Heath.
Just turning around.
I've got some of the Lyseroy, which is the pink one, and you can try that. But it's, you know, that's $16.75 a bottle. You would say that's too expensive, but it's our bestseller.
Right. Yeah, so what, like, and you, like, what is your overall bestseller? Are the people, is it beers or like the beer category, or is it?
Well, you know, there's some very high value products in here. You know, some of the spirits are coming in at nearly £30 a bottle, so you can't really compare beer sales with spirit sales. You know, people will come and we've had to bring in baskets because people are carrying so much stuff at the minute. So, you know, and people will pick up a whole, you know, armful of beers. But, you know, the three spirits go down well because they're mood enhancing, and then we've got things that fit the Aperol Spritz mould go down really well. So the Liars American Malt and the Liars Spritz, we haven't got anything, no spritz left of theirs. We get a lot, but we also get through a lot of sparkling tea. We also get through a lot of Jimba, and Jimba isn't a, you know, a thing in its own right, really. It's a modifier for a cocktail. It's a very, very strong punchy ginger syrup, and we give it to the end of everybody at the end of everybody's tasting. They get a little taste of Jimba, because otherwise they've got no taste buds left if they have it first. We can't stock enough of that. That goes really, really quickly, and people can make it into a hot drink. They can add it into a cocktail to add a kick. A lot of people are drinking it in shots on its own, I can tell you. We get rid of the non-spiced cane, and while you might say that, well, people are looking for things that aren't sweet, the truth is people's palates want something sweeter than they think they do. The other thing that surprised me, though, is how influential I am at selling things. I've never been a salesperson before. And now the things that I love the most get... I shouldn't tell the brands this, because they're all in here and I all love them equally, and we spend a lot of time making sure we do spread that love and everyone gets to try anything they want to try. But yeah, there are, like, anyone on one of my whiskey journeys definitely goes away with a bottle of Nightcap. So there we are.
Interesting.
Conscious of the time, you've got some products that you're going to
I was going to do I'm going to get you guys on the Three Spirits Nightcap, but I was going to try you with High Point. So this is a new spirit, but it's a fermenter spirit. It's made by a brewery in Cornwall.
Okay.
For me, this is a really interesting product, because it would make a great modifier in an alcoholic cocktail. And like in the pub next door, they do a cocktail with this. You're going to have to hold my microphone.
Got it.
Cool. So, and this definitely has to be mixed, right? Because it's nicely acidic. So it's one part High Point, three parts ginger, and... This is one of the ones that I take people on who are still hankering for whiskey, and it's not a whiskey at all. It's its own digestif.
Thank you.
It sometimes splits opinions, so I wouldn't be any more surprised here. But you might be able to see how you might be able to use... Look at that smoky note on the nose. How you might use that in a cocktail. Nice. And how the fermentation gives it a real depth of flavour.
Reminds me of Angostura's bitters.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like a...
It's a nice bit of punchiness in it, so...
Like a vinegar, sort of, because of fermentation.
Yeah, it is,
It's sweeter than I was expecting, actually.
Yeah, interesting.
I feel like I'm being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
I wonder why you were sweating.
don't faint at that.
It's
but
really,
you know,
it's really nice.
It's really nice.
But you see, and then you get that lovely smoky nose, and the cocktail they do next door, that smokiness comes near the end after you've had your first sip, and it's absolutely a lovely experience.
It's quite refreshing.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, people are still playing around. The technology, the processes, the innovation in this space is still going on.
Mm. I really like that.
Yeah.
That's nice, yeah.
Cool. If you down that, because you can, or you might not want to, but I can either get you... Do you want to try an alcohol-free mead?
Oh, I can't stand mead.
Don't be so dismissive.
That means yes.
Let's try it. This is the worst thing, is if people try an alcohol-free drink that is in a style of drink that they never liked before, and they go, oh, that's it, I hate alcohol-free drinks.
You haven't had the right mead.
Yeah.
That's try the problem. Your mind up, James.
It's best to say that this is a sort of a honey-based drink. I think this is Bemuse, and I think it's a beautifully balanced drink. So as a soft drink, it's beautiful. You can use it and lengthen it cocktails with it.
It's better than real mead.
It's better than real mead.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree.
Yes, that's more than likely. Yeah.
The nice thing is you're not at an event with a hairy bloke selling it to you who does reenactments of the weekend.
That's quite nice.
It's very beautiful. And again, you can see how you can use that as a, you know, along with a couple of other ingredients, that as lengthening a spritz or another cocktail.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. We use that in one of our cocktails here, and it's just beautiful.
All right,
I was expecting that to be sweet.
Yeah,
and it's not really.
You're not very good at this, are you?
No.
So again, you know, it's about finding the drinks that are right for your venue, but understanding that the drink doesn't have to be a replica of something. It can have other purpose in your venue. And then shall I finish you with the Nightcap?
Yeah, great.
This is a drink that's got the Three Spirits range have got mood enhancing ingredients in them. They're full of herbs that accentuate your experience. You've got the livener, which maybe I have a shot of when I get in the morning, maybe. And you've got the social elixir that's got herbs in that deal with social anxiety. This is the one that this is the one that I have on the rocks before bed. You can, of course, lengthen it with a ginger ale. But again, it's not like anything else. It makes a perfect cocktail ingredient, particularly if you have an end of the night cocktail. It's got a nice little bit of burn about it. They've gone very quiet.
Ooh.
I'm not sure what this means.
It's really quite pretty, isn't it?
Mm.
But you know, if you think about that, that's got, you know, you can, it's,
a
it's a really, it's a real easy sell to customers. You've got this ingredient with this product with function ingredients. It can make a mood enhancing cocktail. Yeah. A bit like, you know, we've got function beer here, which is made with aptogenic mushrooms. You know, people really like that. Your eyes just went like saucers. You haven't even tried it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the thought of mushrooms.
I had a really bad experience on microdosing once. It didn't go down too well.
These are not magic mushrooms. These are not magic mushrooms, but they are mushrooms that are good for you. People like the idea with alcohol-free drinks that they're going away healthier than they came into your pub.
This is the man that thinks microdosing is
my mate over-prescribed the size of the tablets. He said he made them. You just have a
normal size bottle.
Yeah. And then, it didn't go too well. I had like a whole day of just seeing stuff down Oxford Street.
No, those were the days.
Yeah, last week.
But, you know, there are so many things to explore here and so many, you know, the Everleaf made by Paul Matthews is one of our best sellers. The Forest is gone because, again, that's a really beautiful bittersweet aperitif. You know, Calieno's been around in their bus this January going around the country. People come in now and ask for those things by brand name now, which definitely they wouldn't have done a few years ago. I want to name everybody in the shop, but I know that's impossible, everybody.
But they could probably go on your website and find a load of stuff.
Yeah, right?
If they knew what their website was.
Yeah. If it's joinclubsoda.com. And find us on at joinclubsoda. In fact, we've done a reel for every single brand in the shop over the last month. So, with some nice dulcet voiceovers from my co-founder, Drew. So, but, you know, I think what you get when you come into the shop is some very excited staff, including me and my co-founders, who absolutely adore everything in this shop, and therefore it's really easy to find something that suits you.
So you're going to stay open for the whole of February?
Stay open the whole of February, and then I think the answer is watch this space.
Okay.
I now have world domination plans, but I do have ideas on how we can make something interesting work that works for everybody, both the on-trade and the consumer and the brands, and that's what I'm interested in doing. As you know, I'm a very collaborative soul, Ed, and I think doing things with other people and making things happen is the most exciting thing in the world.
Brilliant. Well, Laura, really that is all we've got time for, but thank you very much for that. This is the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbert. So we're talking low and no in this episode, and I'm delighted to invite one of the big players in the low and no beer scene to join us, founder of Big Drop Brewing, James Kindred. Welcome, James.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad. That's a bit of nice James in the brewing industry, isn't it?
There is, yeah. There's an improvement already.
No comment.
He's got a better beard than you.
No, I meant James Watt. So I have to explain my jokes now.
We thought you were referring to yourself.
James is not a joke.
Honestly.
Exactly. Thank you.
Just a fact.
For goodness sake.
You genuinely have to explain most of your jokes, James, to be fair.
I'm not doing this again.
promises. So, James, let's just start off. Tell us a bit about Big Drop, who you are, what you do.
Big Drop started in 2016. It was myself and one of my oldest friends, Rob, started the company. It came off the back of Rob being a city lawyer and him being the rainmaker and taking people out for long lunches, and they was involved lots of booze and wining and dining. His first child was born in 2014, and he decided to knock drinking on the head, but he couldn't find anything that was kind of, you know, pub worthy in terms of a non-alcoholic drink. There was Beck's Blue, there was sparkling water, there was hot drinks, or there was kind of, you know, super sugary carbonated drinks, and none of those were worthy of having an afternoon in the pub and enjoying yourself or entertaining clients and making sure they were looked after. So he kind of asked himself the question of, you know, why isn't anyone making a craft option of alcohol-free beer? What's the limitation? What's the barrier? He came to me with the idea and said, I've got this idea for this, you know, non-alcoholic craft beer. I was like, okay, I'm interested. I love a kind of good idea and a kind of, you know, a little bit of a disruptive idea. So count me in, let's do it. We went off and found a brewer who's our head brewer, Johnny Clayton, who's an absolute wizard at this sort of thing. He's kind of, you know, created the process, which you know, in my opinion, and probably in Rob and Johnny's opinion, has really kind of moved the industry on in terms of doing stuff that's a bit disruptive with brewing. And here we are, you know, 6 years later, and we're the one of the most awarded, or the most awarded brewers in the UK and the world.
That's amazing. That's out of
full strength, brewers, full strength, and a whole lot.
Right. So, okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Is that just because you enter lots of awards?
A bit of that, yeah. Enter loads of awards.
Lawrence Noddick in the background.
But yeah, it goes from kind of international brewing awards, US Open awards, awards in Australia, World Beer Awards, all that sort of thing. Yeah. So, you know, the top ones have won the Paradiso, the Galactic, the Pine Trail, the Woodcutter, all won World Beer Awards for being really good. And they've also gone up against full strength beers. So when we started, there was no low no category for World Beer Awards. It was put it into the specialist category or put it into the full strength category and see how you get on. And the first, we won a silver international beer award against a 6.2% porter beat us, and we were a 0.5. But they don't base it on ABV, they base it on balance, and they base it on flavour, and they base it on quality of the drink.
That's an achievement.
So a 0.5 kind of came striding in, and everyone went, whoa, hold on, what's going on here? This isn't a thing, is it? So
and we went low and there's nowhere to hide, is there? Do you know what I mean? There's nowhere to hide when you're looking at low and low.
No.
What you can, the alcohol content will mask a load of badness.
Yeah, and you can, you know, the alcohol element of a lot of brewing is the salt and pepper. It's the, you know, they put the seasoning on the top sort of thing. Sorry. Yeah. Put the seasoning on the top, and you have to make sure that that's there. So there's places to hide with that. Right. But with low, no, and that sort of thing, you have to really focus on the balance. The balance is the real thing.
Yeah.
Like if you get it out of kilter, that's when you start getting kind of, you know, weird flavours and that sort of thing. Yeah. If you can get the balance right, hops, the malts, all that sort of thing, you're onto a winner.
Mm-hmm. And were you involved in the beer scene before this?
No. On the other side of the bar, yeah. So I was an avid customer of craft beer and that sort of thing. So, but you know, I knew the beers I liked. I knew the styles I liked. I'm more of the kind of hoppy IPAs and that sort of thing. Rob prefers the darker styles of beers. So we do a brown ale, we do a stout, we do a golden ale as well. But it's about choice. It's about having that choice and being able to go out and feel that you can walk in and order a pint of something and have that style in your non-alcoholic version.
So what are you getting right, do you think, that maybe others aren't?
I think the main thing that we've really focused on, which is something that Johnny said to us when we originally spoke to him about doing it, we went to Johnny and we said, we want to make a really good alcohol-free beer. And he said, no, you want to make a really good beer that just so happens to be alcohol-free. And that's the basis for everything we do. And we'll brew stuff, we'll put styles together, we'll, you know, come up with ideas and that sort of thing. If it's not a really good beer, we won't release it, regardless of, you know, we'll always brew to 0.5% naturally. Don't take any of the alcohol away in post-production or anything like that. But the main thing we want to do is make a really good beer first.
Yes, yeah. And you use reverse osmosis to remove?
Nope.
You don't?
Okay. No. So we brew naturally to 0.5%.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
So that means you can keep a lot of the flavour in there. So if you use a reverse osmosis or vacuum distillation or anything like that, it will pull the alcohol out of it, but the alcohol molecule is sticky, so it will pull a lot of the flavour and that sort of thing out, which is where the kind of the macro beers, your big maltes and that sort of thing, and the, you know, the original offender, the Beck's Blue, they'd brew to full strength and then use a variety of heating and that sort of thing to take it away. But as you're heating the alcohol away, it's taking a lot of the flavour away as well, which is where traditionally you'd have got that metallic-y taste.
Yeah.
Because we naturally brew 0.5%, so we use a mix of different yeasts and that sort of thing, not necessarily found in the brewing process. Traditionally, means we can naturally brew it to 0.5, which means keep all the flavour in there.
Yes, yeah. So what are we drinking here? Which is
So you have got a Paradiso, which is our big seller. So that's a Citra IPA. It's got four different types of hop in it, including Chinook and Simcoe and Citra.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah, it's like...
Mm-hmm. It's beer.
Beer. That's a compliment, really, isn't it?
From Heath.
Well, I don't drink. I only drink stout, really.
This is true.
Yeah.
We'll get you on the Galactic.
Yeah, I get a little buzz from it.
From
you
what?
Mind, just that, you think, oh, you get a little... Just like almost like a... What do you call it?
Real beer.
Yeah, no. Yeah, just
it is real beer.
It is real beer. I'll say that's his reaction. Gonna get slapped by Lord.
Beer is beer is beer.
That's nice, though. That is nice. I mean, what would you say are the challenges that you're sort of finding around the alcohol-free
It's getting easier. It's a darn sight easier than it was in 2016. I think, you know, Club Soda started around a similar time sort of thing, and it was very much the, at the time, and a great deal before that, there was very much the taboo of not drinking in the pub. Or the kind of, you know, why are you drinking
you
that
okay?
sort of thing? Yeah, is everything okay? Is it for health reasons? Yeah. It's like, well, no, I'm just, you know, I don't want to drink. I want to enjoy a beer. I just don't want to drink. Yeah. And that has eased, and through the work that Club Soda are doing and the awareness and just the general kind of growth of the non-alcoholic market just means that people are kind of getting opened up to it, the wealth of flavours that are in it, both from the kind of the botanicals and the non-alcoholic spirits and that sort of thing through to the craft beers, means there's a wide range of stuff. The real trick now is getting people to try it, and once they try it, they're convinced. Yeah. And the one thing we used to do when Rob and I were off driving around in a hire car doing small trade shows and that sort of thing, the thing we learned really quickly is you don't say to someone, do you want to try a non-alcoholic beer? Because they go, not really. Because it's front loaded with the bad memories of things like Calibre.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you say to someone, do you want to try our award winning craft beer? They'll go, abso-bloody-lutely. Yeah. They'll come over and they'll try it, and they'll say, what do you reckon the ABV is on that? And they'll go, well, it's probably, you know, it's quite light, so it's probably like a 3.8, 4.2 tops. And then you do the kind of big reveal. Mm. Well, it's 0.5%. And they either swear at you, or they ask you, or they think they've misheard you.
Yeah.
But that at that point, people's minds have been changed. And it's only at that point that you can kind of have the conversation at the level of beer is beer is beer.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter what the ABV is, it's the quality of the brewing process, the quality of the ingredients, and the care and attention that's put into it to make it a good beer.
It's interesting though, because it was back in the day, you know, someone asked for a non-alcoholic beer and you get that bottle out from the back of the fridge and blow the dust off it.
You know, the fridge with the light bulb.
But now, I mean, we've got, down in Sussex, we've probably got 4 or 5 different cans and bottles. Certainly have 2 of yours, the Galactic and the one we just had, the
Paradiso.
Along with Lucky Saint sits there in the group. But it has changed so much, you have to have it now. So even if you thought it was witchcraft and it was never going to take on, I think pubs don't have a choice now because the consumers demand it.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you kind of just, oh, you better stick one of them in there.
The next thing we want to try and kind of do is get onto the front bar. That's the place.
I was going to say
it's not being in the fridge, because the fridge is kind of below bar height, below waist height. There's usually legs in the way. It's behind other stuff. You can't really see what's going on. People can't see the choice that's out there unless they're asking for it. Or the bar staff have kind of said, if someone asks for a non-alcoholic, tell them that there's all this wealth of options here. Whereas you get on the front bar, and that's the whole thing about Big Drop. If you go in and ask for a Big Drop, you don't have to mention the ABV.
Yeah.
You go in, like Paradiso's on draft, so you can go into an All Bar One and go, I have a pint of Big Drop, please. That's it. That's the conversation. Yeah, you know exactly what you're getting, and the visibility is Big Drop, Beavertown, Camden.
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm. But you can choose any of those three, and it's about choice. It's your choice of how you want to enjoy beer.
We do get that. You certainly get that when someone takes your beer, for example. We do. You'll have to look and make sure we got enough, in that you'll have there, but people will go and go and go because they actually think, oh, you know what, it's all right.
Yeah.
Because actually they're thinking, I'll have that so I'm part of the team. And they go, and they keep going. And you actually sell, you know, we sell a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It'll go. And it's the thing that, you know, once people understand that it can, as a publican or someone as a business owner who can give those people choice, and the choice is the really important thing, because you want to give as many people different options to why they're going to come in. And what you don't want to do is restrict people's choice, because the person that's the non-drinker or the person that kind of steers the choice is the person that will pull the group away. So if you give people the choice that's there in the establishment, that, you know, and everyone can enjoy themselves whatever their drinking style.
I was going to ask you, you've sort of answered this already, but what could pubs be doing better to sell this product? I mean, you've said get it on the front bar.
Yeah, I mean, it can come down to both kind of, you know, how the serving staff talk about it. Mm. You know, it's not a consolation prize.
Yeah.
It's not the weaker than option, pun intended. It's about saying to people and having the conversation at a level of, you know, this, you know, this is this, it's a 4.2%, this is a 6.8, it's probably a bit punchy sort of thing. Or if you don't really fancy drinking, we've got a really good award winning craft beer. Simple as that. But bringing it into the conversation of everything else that's on the front bar or in the fridge or, you know, wherever you're serving it, the conversation is exactly the same as if you're talking about full strength. It's not a, oh, are you not drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, diddums.
Get well soon.
It's not that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the, hey, we've got something that can appeal to you as the customer coming in. Yeah. And equally, someone might, you know, go in, they'll have a 4.2% and then they'll have something else and they'll go, I'm going to pace myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's a Wednesday night. I'm out for a couple of games, a couple of beers after football. I have a big drop.
Yeah.
Up early tomorrow, I've got to meet. You know, we don't want to be prescriptive of what people's drinking habits are or drinking choices are. It's giving people the choice in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Heath, what do you think of the stout as the stout man?
Yeah, I like it.
Love me too.
Yeah.
I must admit, I first discovered you guys, I think it was the chocolate stout.
That's that one thing. Depending on what temperature it's served at, you'll get different. So you'll get kind of the colder temperatures, you'll get kind of coffee notes and that sort of thing. You get like a nitro cold brew kind of bitterness to it, and it's slightly warmer temperatures, room temperature, you get a bit more of the chocolateiness come through.
Yeah, very good.
Brilliant.
Very good.
Brilliant. Well, we're pretty much out of time, but thank you very much, James.
No worries, thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we're now joined online by Amanda Thompson of Thompson and Scott. Amanda is the entrepreneur behind the Naughty brand, which sells a range of alcohol-free, organic, and vegan-friendly wines. So, welcome, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. So, tell us a bit about your wines, what you do, why you do it.
Sure. Well, I was a champagne obsessive, funnily enough, so the real stuff. And I wanted to see if it was possible to create that sort of feeling, but without the alcohol. So that was what led me, a champagne obsession was what led me to create Naughty in the first place.
Fantastic. I think Laura's itching to pop a bottle. So
she's. And
we've got the pop.
And we've got the theatre.
Yeah.
So I mean,
that's the moment I love. And especially any day, really, but you can do it in the morning so beautifully. Sets the day off right.
To mention that. Your partner walks down and you're like, yeah, calm down.
So, I mean, you've got, talk me through the range you've got. What are we drinking here?
So we've got a Brut. So the idea really, I was a Blanc de Blanc girl, so 100% Chardonnay. So that's what I started out creating. So that's from southern Spain, the grapes from sandy vineyards. You've got traditional winemaking in stainless steel vats, and then the de-alcoholization process, which we do by vacuum distillation, which retains the vinous qualities, and then we do a process of aroma recovery. But the idea really was to create something that was really delicious along the lines of champagne, giving you that same kind of placebo effect where the bubbles hit your lips and you feel like you're in the mood for a party, but without the alcohol.
Absolutely. What's the verdict?
I haven't tried it yet, sorry. I'm just reading the back label.
You can read.
I'm struggling. That's why I'm on the first line.
James?
I'm surprisingly good. I think the bubbles help it as well. I think, you know, maybe slightly harder to approach a still red or a still white. But, yeah, it's refreshing. Nice.
It reminds me of the wine I used to drink in a kid in New Zealand. Do you know what I mean? You go in New Zealand, we have quite
yeah, like...
Styles very much like...
They start young, do they?
Listen,
hey, you've just refilled your glass, so it must be good.
I was going to say.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
Yeah. That's an excellent sign.
We could sell that.
Mm.
It's actually got... I'm quite surprised at the body, actually.
Yeah, it's decent, isn't it?
Real decent body to it. And
I mean, I think that because I am an obsessive fine wine lover, I'd like to think that is why Naughty's good, if that makes sense.
Really,
I think that's how I approached it. I trained in wine, and that was my background. And for me, I think that obsession with taste, for me, taste is everything, really. And that I just set out to...
Listen, it's a lot better than a lot of the Proseccos on the market, like, hands down.
Yeah,
it's... Yeah. I really enjoy it. I think you've got the weight in the mouth, and I think it's...
Do you know what? Because you don't miss the viscosity in it. Do you know what I mean? You'd normally get with some of the alcohol. Mm. You just don't miss that. It's got loads of mouth feel in it. It's great.
Loads of flavour.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, thank you. That means a lot coming from you. It's lovely doing tastings for the first time. And what's lovely about Naughty, I think, is it's such an easy sell in the same way that alcohol-free beer was. You know, champagne and Prosecco or Naughty. That's just super easy. And of course, the other beauty is, from a hospitality point of view, a pub point of view, you can get great margins because consumers are really comfortable spending, you know, quite a decent amount on a quality alcohol-free, because they recognise that, you know, it's not any easier or cheaper to produce. And so, you know, you can really make a nice cash margin in bars on it, and it's just so easy. And then, of course, you can switch it up for super simple cocktails as well. So it's a really easy way to have a few simple alcohol-free cocktails on the list too.
Who do you distribute through? Are you direct or...?
So we do direct and then through a number of distributors. I mean, we're in talks with all the lovely pub groups at the moment, so it's great to come direct to you. It's quite early, of course, in hospitality, because alcohol-free, as you'll know, was built, unlike the way we traditionally build alcohol during the pandemic, it was built in an untraditional way in off-trade in direct-to-consumer. So it's only really now that we're starting to approach all of you wonderful people and looking at the opportunity for naughty in pubs, you know, hotels and bars.
What would it retail? What would you suggest a pub should be selling a bottle of that at?
I mean, we see everything from mid-20s to mid-30s, I would say.
Okay. Hey for that.
Yeah, I think I'd listen. It's really good. To cut it really short, yeah, I'd stock it. Mm. I think it's a really good option. I'd do it by the glass as well. Mm. I think people would be really happy to have, like, you know.
Have it in your Aperols.
Yeah, and I'd put it at the top of the menu almost, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think some people would be just quite happy, like, you mean, like, not only are you getting a non-alcoholic drink, but you're getting something really fancy.
Yeah.
And I think you can...
It's not a downtrade.
Yeah, it's not a downtrade at all. It's like, oh my God, this tastes really good. I think
Well, we talked earlier about not approaching comparisons alcoholic with non-alcoholic, but I would kind of...
This could do it.
Yeah, it's really tasty.
If you went to a wedding reception or something and someone gave you that, you wouldn't be unhappy.
But you wouldn't know. I think the thing is, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Mm. I think, you know, I've gone to so many weddings, they give you such guff wine.
We all have, right?
Don't start with my brother-in-law's wedding. Oh, my God. But, yeah, that's, if you got handed that, you'd be quite like, it's lovely.
Yeah,
you should be. Well, I'm done.
Really proud of that.
Do you know what's great to hear you? It's great to hear you all say that, because the way it's been developing is we've had a lot of private clients service at their weddings, and we're at places like The Pig and Limewood by the glass alongside champagne, and I think that's really how it's being positioned, is champagne or naughty, you know?
I'm going to buy some of that for Sarah. Might cheer up.
Maybe get some of the other stuff.
We won't make a joke about that one, that's... completely thrown me with that, James. Thanks very much.
So,
Amanda, the wine category on the alcohol-free side has lagged behind to a certain extent, hasn't it? I mean, we've seen a lot of...
Well, it's quite expensive to make wine, Ed. It's not cheap. It's not like beer. Some guy in his basement making cans.
Well, I was asking Amanda, not you.
Sorry,
but pipe down.
No, but it was a fair point. Thank you for sharing that, because I was going to mention that. But yeah, it's not easy, and I think you touched on the fact that from a wine perspective, you've not solved anything like half the battle, but the mouthfeel is helped, of course, with bubbles. Mm. So I've been working really hard, funnily enough, on a still red, which globally was eluding everybody. And I've got a red launching in a couple of months, and I've got a white and a rosé also coming to market. So that's what I've been squirreling away doing in the pandemic. So I've got a full... still naughty range. So that'll be naughty rouge, naughty blanc, and naughty rosé coming out across the next few months in the year.
So, I mean, is it cost? Is it? I mean, what's held it back from your perspective, Amanda?
I think taste. I mean, it's really, really, really hard to make good alcohol-free wine. I mean, that for me is why we've not managed to innovate. I mean, I'm constantly innovating, and I'm only working with top producers, and I'm all about quality, and I think historically, I mean, you may or may not know, but I didn't even know, being in the formal fine wine business, there was a lot of alcohol-free wine around, but it was just mostly, I mean, sorry to say,
shit.
Mouthwash. I'm not even mouthwash. You know what I mean? If you know, and I think we flipped the model and said, taste is everything. Branding is also important, because for me it's about that quality serve, where if your friend's drinking a decent bottle of champagne, you've got an equal seat at the table. And I wanted to make sure, from an aesthetic point of view, the naughty bottle was really gorgeous, you know, and stylish in the way that champagne would be as well. So you feel like you're just as special, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Heath, have you ever found any alcohol-free wine?
Stuff
you've looked for, is it?
I don't really seek it out, but the stuff I've tried hasn't been great, so I just never bother. Do you know what I mean?
So I'm looking forward, Heath, to you all trying my stills. Once I've got the samples, I'll get those to you. But am I right? We've almost got a deal then, launching in your pubs. That'd be
good. Yeah, 100%. No problem. We'll drop it into the... We've got one in Sussex and one in Highgate, so... We'll drop it in straight away, I reckon.
Well, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, we'll put us in touch and then we can talk.
Yeah,
we can sort that out. We can sort
it's
that
interesting
out.
Interesting, though.
I bet all the apprentice candidates will be very jealous of me, won't they? That was a very easy sell.
Well, you've done the hard work for a long time, so...
For anyone who didn't see the BBC show, they were creating alcohol-free drinks. Very easy, they thought.
Indeed, yeah, yeah. I mean, are there any things you think pubs should be doing that they could be doing better with this alcohol-free category from your perspective, Amanda?
I think that it's not really what pubs should be doing, it's what we should help pubs to do. And I think that's making sure consumers know it's there and labelling it very clearly. And we've just launched with Virgin Atlantic, and what they've very cleverly done is they've put Naughty on the wine list with the sparkling wines and then clearly marked it. And I think there's a couple of things you can do, which is have it on a list that's separate and denotes it, these are all the alcohol-free drinks, but also bring it in as an option for the quality wine drinkers. And I think that's a very clever way to do it. And I think it's up to brands like mine to help pubs like yours to make sure that the messaging gets out there.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, Amanda, that is all we've got time for, but thank you very much for that.
Thanks so much. And I'm delighted to have done a deal. There you go.
You got it. Absolutely.
Good luck for that. This is the Lock-In Podcast, and we are at the end of this episode. We've learned a lot about low and no products and things pubs could do better. Heath, James, what would be your takeaways from this? What do you think you two could be doing better in
our low and no section? Like, I really, really blown away by the bubbles. I think it was really amazing. But just the sheer range, I think, you know, like we said earlier, gone are the days of really dusty bottles of beer down the back of the shelf and you know, people look at you strange when you're not drinking in a pub. I think, you know, pubs need to evolve, and that, I think, you know, we've seen that with the food evolution and pubs and all that. And I think if we just sit back and pretend this isn't happening, we're going to be left behind and we're going to lose consumers. And I think we need to get ahead of it and, you know, embrace it really and just accept, you know, like I know a lot of publicans go, oh, we don't need that. I'm a proper pub and I want pints and all that. But the world's changing. Mm. And if you sit still, you're going to miss and you probably lose.
I mean, you say we'll get left behind. I mean, to a certain extent, we have.
We've been left behind.
You look at the ranges that are available in the off-trade compared to the on-trade, and it's
I just think so many operators just don't want to know about it because they don't understand it. Like, you know, like a lot of pubs with wine, they don't understand it, so they don't want to do it. So I think we just need to, you know, maybe just be a bit more open-minded and come to places like this and have a look at the range and spend time and speak to Laura and understand what the options are and what we can do, you know.
James, thoughts?
Well, I think over the last few, probably 5 or 6 years, there's been a foot race to... The big brands all understand this market's coming. They've done the research. They're in touch. Yeah. There's been a foot race with a lot of really poor product out there, actually, particularly in the supermarkets. Mm. And I think those that have dipped into it and maybe thought, it's not for me, it's poor quality, need to go back and look again.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? But it was a foot race to get market share.
And to be the first.
To be the first. And I think that's gone now. When you look here with the amount of small producers, the sheer range is unbelievable. And the quality. I think I did feel slightly like, oh, brilliant, you know, coming in here, and I thought, you know, a bit sniffy maybe to start with, but when you see everything, you think, actually,
you don't want to know these options. You don't want your wife saying to you, James, why don't you have a non-alcoholic drink for once?
No, but I only drink because my life's miserable, but now I'm understanding that I can drink something else and feel good. You definitely get a bit of placebo. It's a really weird thing, but you definitely do get a little buzz, particularly when you things like ginger that we're drinking here.
I like this.
Yeah, me too.
This is fantastic. Laura, what is it?
Gimbo. Is it Gimbo?
That's Jimbo.
Let me turn you on.
Yeah, that's Jimbo, which is a real big seller both in alcohol and alcohol-free cocktails. It's just a fantastic ingredient.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. That's been absolutely brilliant today. Real eye-opener. I think we'll revise what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, pub,
yeah, of course. Of course.
Fantastic. So, I mean... what's hit the mark for you, Heath?
The bubbles, really like that, and the jumper, and the nightcap.
High point, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was the nightcap, wasn't it?
So everything we drank, basically.
Even the mead was good. Last night I was at home, and the wife was having dinner, and I didn't want an alcoholic drink for many reasons. I just thought it's a Monday, I need to take it easy. And then I wanted to be refreshed, but you just go, oh God, like, what do you have?
Sort of a Virgin Mary.
Oh,
what, with dinner? No, but in the evening, to stop me getting the twitches for alcohol.
maybe you need to spend some time in the shop.
Everyone does.
Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, these are, I mean, would you be going for this as a replacement?
I'm going to buy
it to trick you in an evening.
I'm going to buy the naughty for Sarah, because she'll love that.
Yeah,
and I try her stuff and it's terrible. Mm. The stuff she's getting out of supermarkets is terrible. So you need to be savvy. And I think it's a communication game now. That's what we're really talking about. And hopefully we can cut through some of the big brand stuff that's not very good. It's the same as the beer market. It's the same as the wine market, ultimately. But yeah, I think it's pretty wow for me.
Fantastic. Well, that is all we've got time for, so let's leave that there. We will be back in a couple of weeks with the next episode of Lock-In. And with the March financial cliff edge looming, we'll be taking a good look at finances and what pubs are going to need to do to survive the coming months.
Another cheery episode.
Sure, I need to pay myself assessment.
You've got about you've got about 8 hours.
Okay.
Now we know what he's doing for the rest of the day. That's
busking.
Moving money from my offshore accounts.
And on that note, we'll leave that one there. See you next time, folks.